All right, g'day Novocastrians. Welcome to the Jetstream podcast, continuing our season preview episodes. We've been very lucky to be granted some time with Jets coach Ernie Merrick. Ernie, how are you going?
Going really well, Grant. And I'm disappointed that it's raining, but it's good for the farmers, as they say.
Isn't this good Scottish weather?
It is, but it's
15
not...
degrees and raining. You'd be used to this.
No, it's Scottish weather is more horizontal, and it's more sleet than anything else. But we can't go on our pitches as much as we want. But apart from that, we've had really good preparation, so I can't really complain.
Good stuff. Well, we'll cast our minds back. We haven't spoken to you since the beginning of last season. Just as a sort of a general overview, how did you see last season as an overall sort of picture?
Well, this is the third A-League club that I've coached, and really it's hard to tell in your first year. You're bringing in a lot of new players, you're trying to get the preparation right, the practice games, etc. And taking over a club in the first year, it's pretty hard to have really good success, bearing that in mind, we certainly overachieved. Not overachieved from the point of view of we shouldn't have been there. We deserved to be where we were, and we would deserve to play in the grand final. But I just think it's a tremendous credit to our players and coaching staff and support staff that we went as far as we did. So it was a very exciting year. It was a terrific year, and it probably made a few clubs sit up and take note, because I think we were pretty well written off to finish second bottom.
Yeah, I think
by
so.
The pundits.
Yeah, definitely. One thing I do remember from the chat we had last season before the whole thing kicked off was you set some goals for yourself, but you also asked the team what goals they set, and they said they wanted to win the whole thing. So that sort of confidence and drive at the beginning of the season, I think, was pretty much evident from right from the get-go, and it went all the way through the season. Obviously, we had a couple of ups and downs with Naboot leaving and a couple of injuries. Obviously, Ronnie got injured very early on, but you could still see the senior players driving the whole club forward, and that's a credit to them as well.
Yes, I think it's always important that the players themselves decide on the outcome goals that they're after, and they said we want to finish minimum third, so in the top three. I thought that was quite a challenge. Mm. I tried to talk them into the top six, because I didn't want them to feel as though they failed.
Yep.
If they finished fourth or fifth, but no, they were adamant the top three, and once they set the outcome goals, then we can sit down and talk about the sort of process goals, what objectives you have to reach in order to achieve that, such as work rates, training levels, gym work, injury prevention work, technical stuff like number of players in the box, number of deliveries into the box, all that type of thing. And they set the challenge, they achieved it, they didn't finish third, they finished second, and went all the way through to the grand final, which is a tremendous credit to them. But I always think that if the players set those goals and challenges and not me, then they buy into it more, they take ownership of it and responsibility, and they're also accountable.
Yeah.
Because if they slack off at training, then I can say, look, we have to reset the goals that you set, because with this poor level of training, you're not going to finish in the top three the way you want. So they set the goals and they met them.
Well, before we get too deep into it, I think I speak on behalf of pretty much all of the support from last season that congratulations to you and the team for the way the team played and for the success that the team... And just I think the support generally aren't necessarily just looking for trophies. They just want the team on the park to actually look like they want to be there and to play for passion for the badge, and that was well and truly in evidence last season. So I think, like I said, congratulations to you and to the team for just the fairy tale run of last season was absolutely fantastic, and you could see just with the grand final selling out within a couple of hours that the whole team and the whole city, the team was gotten behind by the city and the region. It was pure credit to you guys and to you especially.
No, well, it's a really big team effort. I mean, there's also the administration staff that work so hard to get members in, to get things running smoothly, etc. So everyone contributes. I'd have to say the fans were fantastic. Without that sort of quality of fans behind you, you're not going to achieve anything. And the point you made is is common in Newcastle, that it's about being competitive and having a go rather than just fans that are only there and fickle and only there when you win. The last four games were interesting, weren't they? Because we lost three before the penultimate, the last game of the season, and we lost three of them, and we lost by a total of 10 goals, and then went out and thrashed the Mariners 8-2, and all during that time there was nothing but support. I didn't hear any criticism at all, and that got us over the line, and the crowds in the finals were fantastic.
Absolutely. One question that one of the guys, a member for Qatar South, asked, with some time to reflect on it, what do you think went wrong for the Jets against the Victory in the grand final? What do you think we struggled in the second half? Do you think that was more down to the game plan that they came with? That you could see they definitely came with a plan to try and pinch a goal in the first half and then just sit back and defend for their lives. And you've got to give them credit. They sort of executed that to a T. But why do you think we struggled to break them down in the second half?
Well, first of all, I'm almost careful to preface what I'm saying in this situation, otherwise it sounds like it's, you know, you're hard done by and you're having a complaint or a whinge or whatever.
I haven't brought up VAR yet.
No, I congratulated the coach and the team. They won the grand final, and that's the way it is. How did we lose it? I think two major points. Their goalkeeper, Lawrence Thomas, was the man of the match, and he was outstanding.
Absolutely.
From my recollection, we had 14 shots to their 7. People think we dropped off in the second half, but we didn't really. It was just that when they shut the shop and made sure that we couldn't play in that front third, it made life very difficult for us. And there's a couple of key players that were in the team and back in the team, that like Ronnie Vargas, who wasn't 100% fit, so maybe a bit of fitness dropped off at the end. But there's no doubt a major influence wasn't the VAR, and I've said this several times, nobody really listens, but the VAR wasn't the problem. The problem was, for the goal that was scored, the referee should have given free kicks for deliberate obstruction of our defence, who couldn't retreat into the box. They were all standing in offside position, three or four of them. I think there was four, actually. And so if they were, it wasn't a free kick for obstruction, it was a free kick for offside, and no one's going to tell me, oh, it's a difficult decision to make. If it's too difficult for a linesman to make a decision on a set play, not open play, on offside, then they shouldn't be doing the job. So that really had nothing to do with the VAR.
Yeah, it's bringing back bad memories, so we'll move on from that.
That's all right, I'm receiving counselling. I'm getting there.
So the squad's been pretty settled in the off-season, second consecutive one, in fact. What have you noticed about training in this off-season, and what does this allow you to work on instead of overall structures if, say, the squad had like a 40 to 50% turnover like some of the other clubs have or like we've had in previous seasons before you've come on board?
Wherever I've coached, I've tried to have continuity and consistency, and so to retain 10 out of the starting 11 from the grand final was a big plus. And then to bring in three more strikers and a midfielder and promote young Angus Thurgate into a full scholarship, who's now with the under-20s, and bring in a goalkeeper, I think we've added depth to the squad, and a lot of we've actually got 9 strikers, so we've got really good competition up front, and we'll need them given the fairly horrendous schedule that we've got round about January and February and March for Champions League, first of all to qualify, and then if we do qualify, the 6 games home and away. I think we've got 7 games in January, and Dimi Petratos may be away with the Socceroos, so we've tried to plan ahead. What can we do? We can develop further our attacking play, particularly in the front third. And once players know each other, they don't become too stereotyped. I give them a lot of freedom. So instead of the left winger staying too wide, too long, he can come inside and switch with the central striker. Dimi Petratos starts on the right, comes inside, switches with Ronnie sometimes. And so they've got a lot of freedom that we can work on in that front third, as long as they remember there's no freedom in defence, they've got a job to do. Our midfield is just getting so much better at both at ball winning and playing good quality balls forward, and Matt Redenton's been a huge plus in there. But Nick Cowburn, who didn't see a lot of game time last year, he's just improved. Of course, Ben Kantorowski and Steve Ugarkovich were outstanding. And in the back line, We've got more options in fullback positions now, so I can actually push forward Jason Hoffman. I don't know if you remember that guy.
But yeah, we remember him.
He's reincarnated Jason. He's a different character now, so he can play just about anywhere, and he's starting the first game in goals. And apart from that, Lachlan Jackson's come on a long way. Ivan Bouyuka is getting really fit. He had a lot of problems with tonsillitis, would you believe, last year.
Oh, really?
And
okay.
He's had his tonsils out, and he's fitter than ever. Johnny Katrumbas is looking terrific. So we've got good depth, we've got a good squad, and we can build on the coaching structure, both in defence and attack and transition that we worked on last year.
It's been pre-season games have been quite interesting, especially with the fact we've been playing Roy, even though he's going to be missing for 8 games. Was there reasoning behind that?
Oh, yes. As soon as you start ignoring one of your best goal scorers, they're going to not only go downhill physically and technically, but most importantly, mentally. So I've chopped and changed. Sometimes he's played, sometimes he hasn't, but more recently he hasn't been starting. But he has been outstanding at training, and he knows that he'll be a little bit behind regarding match fitness, but you should see him scoring at training. He's doing a really good job.
One of the we'll talk about the new players. So obviously, the big hole was going to be up front and in the sort of wide positions with Naboot leaving. Obviously, we brought in Jair to fill that hole. What attracted you to him, and what's he sort of shown in the preseason? Obviously, he's starting a little bit behind the eight ball, but how do you think he's going to be come next weekend?
Well, first of all, the structure up front, we don't really play with wingers. Our wingers are fullbacks that get forward, so we play with three strikers. I like strikers to... There's two types, basically. The ones that have got speed and get in behind, and the ones that come to feet and play through balls and are more creative. So we've got Dimi Petratos in that type of role, and Ronnie Vargas can play there as well if he's not playing in number 10 and they switch. But Jair Brito, we took a while to make sure we got the right person. He's not only a goal scorer with one foot, he scores with both feet, but he's a worker. Mm-hmm. And his knowledge of the game is very good, and his ability to play any of those front three positions means that we can continue with this place-changing stuff, which is more played in the biggest leagues now, in Germany and in the English Premier League and in Spain and Italy. So he's quick, he's got a great shot, he's very strong, and he's good at recovering the ball with the team, and his work rate is first class. So although he turned up fairly unfit, his work ethic has been great. He's training up to 3 times a day now, and he's the one driving that.
Yep. Okay, so he's going to be ready to go round one?
Well, he surprised us, because I thought it'd be round 6 or 7.
Yep.
But he'll be in the mix for round one, yes. He may start, he'll be on the bench, but he may be on the bench, but he'll definitely play a part in the first game.
Another player we brought in has been Mitch Austin. Obviously, he's struggled, I think, would probably be fair to say, when he was playing down in Victory. What attracted you to Mitch?
Well, first of all, when a player has struggled at Victory, that's quite funny, really, when you think of Andrew Naboot and Daniel Georgieski, who were sort of rejected by them. So I think it depends. A player can excel depending on the structure that he's playing in and the type of players he has around him.
Yeah.
So I think Mitch, a lot of people don't realise this, but we tried to actually sign him the year before, but they wouldn't release him. He got injured. He was out for 7 months with a knee reconstruction. He's 100% fit. He's got all his pace. I'm a big fan of those players that get in behind. If they've got pace, it's a big plus. So he's an in-behind type player. And I'm working on him occasionally using his right foot, not too often, and coming inside rather than always being predictable and going in his left foot and hitting in crosses, because we don't need him to hit in that many crosses. And he's loving it, and he's really enjoying himself.
Good stuff. One of the other new players we brought in was a player from Avondale, playing down south, Kane Shepherd.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's fairly good track record in the NPL. You think he's going to be able to make that step up where a lot of NPL players have traditionally struggled to make that step up?
Yes, I think he's definitely going to make the step up. Again, it's how we expect him to play, and he's more of a ball to feet than a ball behind. A rocket shot with either foot and a good knowledge of the game and terrific at setting up other players. And again, he can play anywhere in the front three, even the number 10 position. I looked at his history and his background, and he played non-league football in England. If you don't know non-league football in England, it's like Scotland. It's called junior football in Scotland, where I played, where they don't take prisoners. Mm. It's fairly rough and tough. So he's had a tough background from an early age. I think he was playing a 17, 18-year-old in really tough football. Mm-hmm. He's had a short bout in Finland where he really didn't get much of a chance, but he's excelled in the NPL. And at 24, he's primed to sort of kick on from here, and with the quality of the players we have around. His main trial game was against the under-20s, and I was just so impressed that he started on the right, but he was in the box five times getting off shots. One hit the bar, one hit the post, one went in, was a goal, one just over the bar, one just wide, and very good in the air. So you get, you know, he'll start off as a bench-type player, but once you can turn to the bench and you have a player like Kane, they're the players that we didn't have in the grand final. Someone that can come on and win something and because they score goals.
Yeah, okay. And Matt Rydenton's obviously a player that's been very successful playing for Wellington Phoenix. We managed to pick him up, and you've spoken about him a little earlier. So how have you seen him making the transition into... Obviously, you've worked with him before, so it's a player that's probably going to adapt to your methods a lot quicker than necessarily some other people would take to acclimatise.
He knows what to expect. He's trained really hard with us. I signed him as a 17-year-old. He's already played in the New Zealand national team. He's played almost 70 games in the A-League, so he's actually got more experience than Riley McGree, who mm-hmm. he's replacing. And he's just a very hard worker. He's one of these players, we call it the 13-kilometre club. Boys in our team that have covered over 13 kilometres in a game, we've got about four of them or five of them. Some of them pretend to have, but they cheated a little bit. I'm only kidding. We use GPS, you can't cheat anymore.
Yeah, that's it.
He's just thoroughly enjoyed the quality of the team round about him, the standard of training, the opportunity to get forward as well as defend well. And he's just another player that's just slotted in with a great attitude. And but by the way, all these players are bargain basement price. So we've done it all within a very good budget.
Good. All right, no worries. A lot. The other really strong thing has been the re-signing of a lot of our players. How have you seen that affecting the squad? It's obviously been good to have a settled squad without having to chop and change too many people, and just you're only dealing with trying to acclimatise a small group of players rather than, again, like we said before, half a squad.
Continuity is very important, especially if they buy into the playing system that you have. I think it's always important to add three or four players to the squad, which we've done, but to re-sign high-quality players tells you that they're very happy to be here and that this club's not a transit lounge for the next step, even though it's a good thing for them to aspire to play in Europe or in other countries in Asia and Japan or wherever. But to re-sign Dimi Petradas and a three-year extension, Nigel Bugard, 2 years... Daniel
Georgeski,
Stephen, you get there. I mean, the list is endless, and they've really committed. It's not just 6 months here, up till January, and all these clauses in their contract so they can get out in 5 minutes. These boys want to be here, and if they go on to bigger and better things, we'd support that without a problem. So yes, we've retained the vast majority of the squad, and we can build on what we started off with and achieved well last season.
So a couple of the players that did struggle to get appearances last season, play obviously you've talked about Ivan Vujica with his tonsil issue, but players like Costa Petratos and Lockie Jackson came in when he was required and did really well. We did see Johnny Katrumbas on occasion, but are you expecting these players to be able to step up and force their way in, or be looking to force their way into the starting 11?
Very much so, and all of those players have got really good potential. And Johnny Katrumbas, for example, has played a lot of pre-season games and has done really well. Costa's got a slight knee injury that's held him back a bit, but Costa and Lachlan played a lot of games in China because I didn't take about 8 senior players, and we won that tournament over there. That's what the trophy in the corner is.
Ah, yep. I'd say that it's a very interesting trophy.
It's the world's worst trophy. It's pink and it's got a strange... It's unusual. It's not the colour pink. It's just it doesn't look like a football trophy. However, to for Lachlan Jackson to break into the squad, he really has got to be better than the two centre-backs we have. And we've got the best two in the league, according to all the stats, as in ball-winning and delivering from the back line and scoring goals as well. So with Nigel and Nicolai there, it's tough. So we've started working on Lachlan being an option as a full-back as well, because he's so quick, he's got height, he's got strength, and he can score goals from set pieces.
All right. Going back to Jair, how has he settled into the city and life in Newcastle? Because obviously it's going to be a bit of a... He's been around the traps. I think his last club was in Korea. How's he settling in?
He had two clubs in Korea and one club in China, and they drove him really hard. His goal-scoring record in Korea was outstanding, not so good in China, which he was there for a shorter period of time at a lower level, and I guess the service might have been poor, but he's loving the lifestyle here. He's living, I think, in Mayfield, fairly close to the training venue here at the university, and I asked him how he's... two children are going, and his wife, which is very important. Mm. And they didn't go to China, they were in Korea with him, but he says they're loving it. He's got a swimming pool. The kids are so excited about having a swimming pool because he's probably been staying in an apartment type set up over in Asia. But they're loving the lifestyle and the people, the climate, the house, and his football. He's really enjoying his football. So enjoying what you're doing is such a key ingredient for success. So He's almost an Overcastrian now.
It's something that I've noticed. Obviously, previous import players we've had, we haven't really pushed to bring their families over. It was something that, especially with Ronnie Vargas last year, we noticed that was a big push to get the players more settled and not just be, you know, buzzing around an empty house on their own. Is that something that the club has sort of taken as an area of opportunity from previous seasons to make sure that the players have that, an import player especially, sorry, would have that sort of more of a stable life and have their family around them?
Well, I can only talk of since I've been at the club, but Laurie, myself and Joel are very big on players enjoying their sport but having a good social and family life as well. And it's very difficult to be at your best when your family are not with you, so... Mm. We think that's very important, and we try and include them in a lot of our activities and social gatherings. And some of the local lads, like Nigel and Jason Hoffman, they've just had young children. So it's very much a family-type club now. I don't know what it was previously, but we would encourage that with all our players, local and overseas players.
Last couple of questions. One player that obviously did have a barnstorming season last season was young Joey Champness. How's his injury progressing, and what's the sort of time frame for his return?
On the injury front, Joey's really the only one now. Ben Kantorowski and Costa Petratos are really just getting fully healthy and fit, but they're over their injuries, and we won't use them until they're 100%. So Joey Champness was a very unlucky injury he got, breaking the small bone in his foot. It's called a Jones fracture. Mm-hmm. It's got a poor blood supply, so it takes a while to heal. He's got the boot off. He's cycling now, and he's very close to running, but January is the period we're looking at is to bring him in, and January is just a very important time given that we might lose Demi, and we've got 7 games at that stage, and we'll have Roy back by then, so we're actually looking pretty good for the second half of the season.
Yep. Something you touched on before with the Asian Champions League campaign, are we looking to bring in any extra players for that time period, or are we basically running with what we have now?
We're not looking at any new recruits at this stage, but you never know what happens during the season, whether we get injuries or...
Someone becomes available.
Or somebody becomes available at the right price. Mm-hmm. I don't think we'll need any players. We just need more rest in between games. I think we have one phase where we play, and 3 days later we play again, and 3 days later we play again, and one of those games is in Perth.
Mm.
I mean, it's just horrendous. But you have to play the hand that you're dealt.
Yeah.
And... We had a very good draw last year. This year we've got the first 6 games, only 2 at home, and they're against Victory in Sydney. But what the boys have bought into is that if we're well prepared, may as well do it tough at the beginning and get in at the deep end and back yourself to be better prepared than everyone else, and we've had an outstanding pre-season with two tours, one in China, one in Spain, good friendly games, a couple of games in the FFA Cup, and tremendous training sessions here on a good facility at the university here.
We talked before about the goals that the players set themselves for last season. What have they set themselves for this season, and what are you hoping to get out of this season?
We don't sit down and set goals every season. I think because it's basically the same squad, the challenge will be the same. Can we get in the top three again, and can we go one better? And in order to achieve that, we've stepped up training in pre-season, and we've had everyone together for a longer period of time. So the challenge is, can we do it again? And hopefully they get things right when it comes to a grand final, if we're lucky enough to get in there. But you do need a wee bit of luck. We had that luck last year when it counted. Some things will go for you, some against you, but we anticipate having a very good year and definitely being in the finals.
And have you seen any of the strengthening of the other teams? Because Perth have obviously brought in Tony Popovich and a raft of new players. Sydney FC have lost some really good players, but have replaced them with some good players. Melbourne Victory have obviously brought in Honda and a couple of others. It seems there's going to be a lot more competition for that premiership, and we know that a final series can be a lottery either way. You just need some luck to go with you. But how do you see us shaping up for a tilt at the premiership this season? We did finish a little way off Sydney FC, obviously.
Well, as you say, we've improved a lot. We've had a good pre-season. We've recruited well, but so has most of the other teams. I think Melbourne City have recruited well and have prepared well. Melbourne Victory and Sydney are always going to be very tough to beat, especially the budgets for the players that they've been able to bring in. Perth, under Tony Popovich, going over there is going to be a tough match as well, especially if we're doing it with a three-day turnover.
And the derbies are going to be more competitive this year because Central Coast have really, really stepped up their recruiting.
That's right. And I think Mark Rudin has put together a strong squad over at Phoenix, and that's always a tough game travelling across the ditch to play. So, yes, Brisbane Roar, they've just signed another Spanish player. I remember in the old days we used to have a salary cap. I'm not sure if we've got a salary cap anymore.
Yeah, I don't know how much longer it's going to be around either.
So there's a lot of teams stepped up, and that's good for the league in general, and it's good for the fans. Games should be more exciting, and I think more teams will be playing attacking rather than counter-attacking football.
Beautiful. All right. Well, thank everybody. We thank everybody for the questions that they submitted. And we also very much have to thank Ernie for giving us some of his time before he has to race off and do meetings and get more training underway. So really thank you for the time, and good luck for the season ahead.
Thanks, Grant. It's my pleasure.